Welcome to the Prosperous Piano Teacher Podcast. I'm Ashley Young, pianist, instructor, and business coach, and I'm here to help you dream big about what your studio could be if you are willing to open your mind and level up your business skills. I'm going to share the tangible strategies that I've learned for streamlining and scaling your studio so that you can align your business to work for your life instead of letting your business control your life. I am so happy that you're here. Let's dive in. Hey there, before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to make a quick announcement. I have a brand new business coaching package that I am opening up to two people in the next couple of weeks. This coaching package is definitely not for everyone. This is for those of you that already are collecting leads and growing your email address. This is for those of you that have ideas of courses that you want to create, or those of you that have already created courses, but you would like help learning how to market and sell those courses in more effective ways. This is for those of you that really want to level up your messaging and your marketing and make sure that as you try to create passive income with a course, that you're doing so in a way that is scalable and that you're doing so in a way that will lead you to success because you know how to market and sell that course. This package is going to be 8 sessions. And over the course of the 8 sessions, which don't necessarily meet every single week, we are going to get you help either creating your course or putting your course up on Kajabi. We're going to help you work on your live launching skills, your marketing, your messaging, growing your email list so that you constantly have new leads coming in that will be interested in what you're selling, and so much more. This package is going to include support between those 8 sessions via an app called Telegram. It's going to include access to scripts, templates, sales sequence emails, and everything that you need in order to have success with the launch and creation and promotion and selling of your course. And it's going to have exclusive Kajabi technical support from me and also my team. And my assistant is an amazing Kajabi expert. You will also have a chance to guest here on the podcast. So before we dive into today's episode, if this is something that you're interested in, pull up my DMs on Instagram, Ashley Young Music Studio, shoot me a message and we can chat about if this is a good fit for you. I can send you more details and ask you some questions to see if it would be a good fit. Again, it's not for everybody. And I don't even have a landing page up for this yet. It's just a new package that I'm so excited to offer. And I know that a couple of you are going to hear this and know that it is a fit for you. DM me and we'll chat. All right, now let's dive into the episode. Hello, hello. Welcome into another episode of The Prosperous Piano Teacher. I'm Ashley, and I'm so excited to be sitting here with a very special guest today. I am sitting here with Becky Brewer, who is a violin, viola, and piano teacher, and who has her very own private studio and also some other exciting updates that we're going to talk about later in the podcast episode. Hello, Becky. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good, and I'm so excited to chat with you today. So can you give us a little bit of an overview of how you got to where you are today, teaching violin, viola, and piano in your home studio?
So when I went to school, I got my degree in violin performance, but I never wanted to be like a soloist or huge into performing. I always knew that I wanted to use my degree to teach violin lessons, and I actually did teach in my junior and senior year of college. But when I got married, my husband was in graduate school. So I actually got a job at a real estate office as an assistant just to like kind of tide us through, and eventually became a real estate agent. And another agent was helping a piano teacher downsize. And as she downsized, she did not want to teach any longer. So I actually inherited her piano students, and I had never planned on teaching piano. So that kind of became a jumping off point. I actually travel taught for 6 months with those, like, I think it was only 2 students, maybe 3, with 2 families, and I hated it.
So you're going into their homes and teaching them at their homes. Yeah.
But I hated it. It was so much time spent driving, and we were in an area that nothing was close. It was, we were between a couple of lakes, and so it was really good for real estate, but it wasn't good for traveling piano teachers. So anyway, I brought those students to my home and started a home studio with piano and violin students. And for years, I was just piano and violin. We went through 2 moves, and so I restarted twice. And I had been wanting to add viola and saw a need and a demand to add viola for a long time. So over Christmas, I got myself a viola and I started playing it and I thought, I can do this. So I am now open to viola students. I don't have any viola students yet, but I'm open to viola students now and I'm really excited about that.
That's so wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing a little bit about your background. It's so nice to know, you know, how people got started, because I find that everybody has a little bit of a different journey to, well, in life, right? But especially to when they come around to music teaching and to having their own home studios. And for those of you listening, Becky and I know each other. Becky was a listener of the podcast, and I was reading, she submitted some info for me, and I was reading that she, I think, first heard about the podcast in like the Piano Teacher Central Facebook group and started listening to the podcast, and then eventually became a business coaching client. And so we worked together really closely over the last few months to help Becky, you know, do some things in her studio and start a YouTube channel. We'll dive into all of that. But the thing that stood out to me when I first met you is you told me how many times you had moved and how many times you had restarted your studio and the fact that you have a wait list. And whenever I hear that a teacher has a wait list, it's a really good indication that you're a good teacher and that you're in demand, right? Because you have a full studio and you have students waiting. So can you speak a little bit to how you went about doing that? You know, when you moved locations so many times and ended up having a full studio every single time.
Interestingly enough, it was always word of mouth. So when the first time when my husband was in grad school, it was that teacher that I inherited students from, and then talking to the strings teachers in the area. And I really, at that point, it was a little bit difficult because I really wasn't in an area that had a lot of children where my home was. So it was word of mouth through the students I inherited from the teacher and talking to the string teachers. But I had in the teens at that time, number mm-hmm. of students, and we were there for 4 years. And then our next move, we were there for 9 years, and that's where I had all my babies. Mm-hmm. But I still did not have like Facebook or any social media. In the neighborhood that we lived in after that first move, there was a mail hut and there was a bulletin board at the mail hut. So I put up a flyer with the little tear offs and my phone number. And I got tons of students from the neighborhood that were walking to my house. In that area, we lived in a neighborhood with a lot of children. And there I went through 4 maternity leaves. So I actually was kind of starting over every time. I would keep some students, but not everybody. So that was slow as well. Eventually I did get Facebook and we had a neighborhood Facebook group. So it went a little bit faster rebuilding after my maternity leaves, because it was just a faster way and easier way of marketing to reach more people. Mm-hmm. When we moved here, this neighborhood has like, when we moved in, it had like 800 homes with thoughts to double. Now it's over 1,000 homes and almost everybody has kids. The elementary school that my kids go to is 5 minutes away from my house. I now have kids ranging from freshman in high school down to third grade. So I have access to a lot of kids. So word of mouth and Facebook, there's a Facebook group for my neighborhood again, but the bottom line is everything has always been word of mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, that totally makes sense. And word of mouth is one of the most powerful forms of marketing, even in the online space. Like if you stumble across, let's say, someone's random YouTube channel, there's a really big barrier to entry of you clicking on a video if it's someone that you don't know, you've never heard of, and you're slightly interested in the topic, right? A big barrier to entry of you clicking on that video versus if a friend sends you, let's say a friend texts you the link to a video and says, oh my gosh, you have to see this. I know you're going to love it. Totally different barrier to entry, right? And so word of mouth is such a powerful form of marketing, regardless of what you're marketing for. And so I love that. And then I also used to use Facebook groups a lot. And I mean, I don't as much anymore, but I did even when I first started my YouTube channel, because Facebook groups are a great way. You have such a community of people that are usually gathered together based off of one common interest, whether it's location-based, if you're teaching in-person lessons, that works really well, obviously, or, you know, like a piano player Facebook group is going to be a great place to post a video for piano players. And of course, they all have their own rules and regulations and things like that. So you want to make sure that you are following those so you don't get kicked out of groups. But Facebook groups are a wonderful way to advertise if they allow it. And if you genuinely contribute to the group and also advertise your services, I found that is the balance to strike for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So you were already doing some really wonderful marketing things before we even met. So talk to me about what changed and what you were feeling like when you started listening to the podcast and what was resonating with you. Why did you end up thinking that there were changes you needed to make in your studio?
So I already knew that I wanted to make some big changes. I had been wanting to do it for years. My kids are all in school now. So all of my teaching hours were hours, and they still are for the most part, but I was using 4 days a week, the entire evening after my kids were home from school teaching. So I would teach 3.5 to 4 hours every evening after school from either 3:30 to 7:30 or 4, sometimes to 8, not very often to 8, but sometimes till 8, Monday through Thursday. And I did keep my weekends free, but like my husband was the only one driving them to activities. He was feeding them. I was eating super late at night. They were getting ready for bed by the time I was eating, and especially my littles. But yeah, I was tired of it. And I, every single year when the school year would start, I gotta do something different. I gotta do something different. It's like, well, we can't do it without your income. And I could never figure it out on my own. How do I thought that attracting homeschool students was the way to do it, but I would get one here or there, and it would take away like half an hour to an hour, maybe an hour and a half of having to teach in the evening, but it wasn't enough to really take a big dent out of it. And so when I started listening to your podcast and really just, you have a free Facebook group for Casual to Confident. And then eventually you started the Prosperous Piano Teacher Facebook group as well. So I was involved in those as well. And I was getting your marketing emails, and I was just seeing that you didn't teach in-person lessons, but you used your teaching skills to really do something during school hours, you know, that during the hours that you wanted to. It didn't even matter whether it was school hours, during the hours that you wanted to. And you were very successful at that. And you had also spoken to you when you had your daughter, you knew that you didn't want to teach in the evenings. And I was like, well, that's what I want. And I could see that you were where I would love to someday be.
Yeah.
Got it. So okay. I was just like, this is who I want to get coaching from. This is that's what I want to do.
Yes. Well, thank you. Yeah. And I go a little, I recorded an episode last week that's going to be out next week. So I was recording it a little ahead of time about the most recent launch of Casual to Confident Piano Player. And I talk a little bit about that because I think it's such a big drive for a lot of piano teachers is like, you know, if you think the working hours have to be in these after school hours, which is the reality for so many people, that was my reality for so long. It's like, how do you get out of that? How do you get out of that? And I talk, and you'll hear me talk about it next week, but I really talk about like, it was really just like a belief that I had to convince myself of. I was like, there has to be a better way. There has to be a way that I can work during the school hours and not work during the after school hours. And it's funny, once you convince yourself of a belief, how much your brain will start to go at it to try to make it true, right? And to try to find the solutions to that belief. So I love that you wanted to shift that as well. And I know when we met, you were really struggling also with like rescheduling lessons and feeling like, so you were already maxed out with teaching, but then you also were sometimes like giving away that extra time or giving away that free time to schedule makeup lessons. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. So I changed my policy shortly before I started coaching with you, but before that change, I was either forfeiting my fee if people told me ahead of time, or I was trying to reschedule lessons. The change that I made shortly before I met you was there won't be reschedules unless I make the change. Because I had like kids activities and things like that sometimes that I feel bad not giving lessons for.
Right.
But if they had to miss a lesson, I would not reschedule, but I would do a video lesson or I would offer a FaceTime lesson, which I do want to work on that becoming better, but it didn't work in the sense that taking a in-person student and turning them into an online student because they weren't set up or the video lessons a lot of times didn't get watched. So I did that so that I would have something to give them, but that still was not working.
Right.
So the rescheduling was making me even more burnt out. And with the changes I've made, I've reduced the number of students. So I do have some room to reschedule, but the way I've structured my studio policies now, I don't have to because I have flex weeks that I've built into my schedule and there's a lot to it, but I don't have to do it unless I choose to do it.
Right. And that's such an empowering feeling to know, like, it moved you away from that hustle mentality of like, oh my gosh, I have to do this, or I'm going to lose students, or I have to do this because I feel so bad, and moves you more into a position of like, I'm the business owner and I'm going to run this business in a way that really works for my life and provides value for the students. And I know you just shared several things in there. So I want to just break it down a little bit, because one of the things you mentioned was like, I know when we met, you were trying to do video lessons as makeups. And I think I told you, and I told another teacher at one point, like, I charge more for online lessons than I did in person. And this one teacher that I told that to was so shocked. But I was like, if you think about the logistics on the back end of what it takes to move an in-person lesson online, like, you have to either look for PDFs of the music or take pictures and upload them to your computer. You have to move all the lesson notes online. You have to make sure you have all the stuff you need to screen share there. You have to like move your computer, change your studio setup. It's a lot that goes into switching from in-person to online. So I think it can be, and I know there are teachers that have offered both and offered hybrid, but it's more complicated than just like a flip of a switch, right? And if a student informs you 10 minutes before a lesson, you're not always going to be able to accommodate them online.
Yes, exactly. I had a student who had done it a lot before asked for it online, and my iPad was dead. And I was just like, I can't even remember. Oh, he was under the weather, but she just texted me while I was in my lesson before him. So it was really nice to be able to say, I can't do that today.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, talk to me about what your studio policy looks like now and what some of the change, and you've already spoken about some of them, but go into even a little more detail about what the changes are that you've made, perhaps the ones that you feel like have made the biggest difference in your studio and your work-life balance.
Okay, so I don't know if this has made, yeah, it has made a big difference. I almost doubled my rates. And that,
can we just get a floor clap for that?
That was a really, really hard one for me. And I knew when I hired you, from listening to you, I knew that you were going to ask me to make a big rate change. And even though it was scary, and even though it was like, how do I do this? Like, how do I make it seem worth it when I've been doing it so inexpensively for so long? You really helped me with that. But in making that huge rate change, I added a monthly newsletter, including a student of the month, and I added a monthly group class. And those two things are taking up the time that I was using on invoicing and chasing payments. So it's not really extra time for me, but it adds so much to the students. And I love doing it too. It's such a better use of my time. So then, speaking to invoicing and chasing payments, I set up funds. Mm-hmm. And it automatically deducts their payment on the first of the month. Yes, it's awesome.
Nobody could see that, but I just did like a little clap excited dance for Becky.
I don't have to keep track of who's paid me. It emails me if someone doesn't pay me. I don't have to have these paper invoices that I cut in quarter sheets. I don't have to text anybody. They get an email from funds. I did have one who it failed payment twice. And it was a debit card, and I did text her, and she said, oh, I forgot. It was her son's a teenager, and she put it on his debit card, and he lost it. So she had to redo it. So, and she had, I don't know if she got the emails and passed by them or what, but so, you know, there was one situation, but it's much more rare. So, right. It was just like, that was 5 seconds. It wasn't a big deal. So I have a lot more time not doing that I'm spending on these other things that add so much more value to my students getting lessons. And with the rate increase, my goal was actually to reduce the number of students I was teaching so that I'm still teaching, because I do love teaching in-person lessons. So I'm still teaching and I still have students that I love working with, but I'm not taking away as much of my family time.
Yeah.
So right now I'm at 12 students with one opening, and I'm totally fine with that. I feel confident that I can fill it when I'm ready to fill it. And I feel great. I feel much more relaxed. I'm able to give the energy to the students that I did keep.
Oh, makeup. So beautiful. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Makeup. So I did a no makeup policy. If they're missing it, if they are missing a lesson, there's no makeups. If I have to miss a lesson, I have 3 flex weeks built in. And if I have to miss more than that, then I will do a proration that month or a refund for that lesson. I do have a lot of kids events coming up. So I kind of feel like I might reschedule some, but not all. And because if I use all my flex weeks now, then I might get into trouble if I get sick in the fall or something like that. So, but I have the room to do that. Now that I'm down to 12 students, I have the room to do that with my, within my schedule and not feel burnt out.
Right.
And still get to go to my kids' band and orchestra performances and track meets. So,
yeah. That's awesome. And we don't have to go deep into the numbers like we do in our coaching sessions, but I know, so you're at 12 students now, but you're making more money than you were before with more students,
slightly
right?
More money than I made last year, which leaves me, what I'm doing is I'm keeping my salary the same and I'm investing that into my business. And I just bought a course for myself that I'm really excited about too.
Cool. Oh, this is so great. So what I really want to highlight here, because I think, I mean, I talk about this all the time, but it's so great to hear it in different people's stories, is when you start to automate and streamline. So like, for example, you got Fonz, which then freed up all of this time in the month that you had been writing out paper invoices and like calculating rates and, you know, figuring it all out by hand. You now no longer had to do that. And so you had some free time in your schedule and you were able to fill that time with value adds for the studio, creating the monthly newsletter, doing the monthly group class. And that allows you to bring your rate up much higher because you're putting it back into the studio. And like you said, I love, you're like, I'm going to take that money and reinvest it into the business, into myself, into the business. And you're, that's only going to continue to happen. So once you continue to streamline and scale, it happens at different levels, right? And you will eventually get to that level then where you're saying like, oh, okay, now there's income coming in from the YouTube channel. Now I'm thinking about letting go of a student. Okay, now there's income coming in from a course sale. Now I'm thinking of letting go of another student. And eventually you find that perfect balance. And it's different for each person of like, you know, how many in-person teachers, how many in-person students are you teaching? And how much money is coming in from other sources, but you are in control of it and you have options because you're not just pigeonholed into this one stream of income of trading, you know, hours for dollars. And so I love that. I'm so excited for you. It's really cool to see. So tell me about what other plans you have. Cause I know you started, spoiler alert, Becky started a YouTube channel. So talk to me about that.
So I don't know when this will air, but I'm planning to have my YouTube channel launch either, I haven't picked an exact date, but it will either be at the end of March or the beginning of April.
Okay.
End of March or beginning of April. So I got to decide which day I want the new videos to be, and then that'll determine whether it's going to be within that week, around either right before or right after Easter. So I've got a YouTube channel that I'm working on called Your Violin Coach. And so it's everything that I talk about is going to be applicable, or I shouldn't say everything, but most of what I talk about is going to be applicable to everything that I teach, which is violin, viola, and piano. But everything will be applicable to violin and viola because they're very parallel, if that makes sense.
Totally.
But my primary instrument is violin. So I decided that that's what I wanted to call my YouTube channel, Your Violin Coach.
Yeah. And you eventually want to, correct me if I'm wrong, but you want to work with like violin players that are a little bit more advanced, maybe not totally in the beginning stages of learning.
Yes. I love that's the easiest thing for me to work with is violin players that already read music and that have an understanding of half steps and whole steps. So other things I've been thinking about, which I don't know if they will come to fruition, but like giving people a piano foundation. So if I do a digital course, that might be what it is. It's a piano foundation for instrumentalists. Even if I do have a beginner student, it's so much easier to get them where they need to be if they have that foundation.
Totally. That makes sense. And you know, on the podcast, we don't always just stay in the space of like, these are all the amazing things. So I'd love to ask you in, you know, the real, like honest truth, how is it trying to do the YouTube channel? Cause I know personally it's challenging. And I think it will be really helpful for other teachers to hear, you know, it's not just this perfect success story of like, you easily made all of these changes in your studio and you easily started this YouTube channel. What are some of the struggles that you're coming up against as you try to film and edit these videos and get the channel launched?
So filming is interesting. So it's, I love it. I have fun with it, but it's like, how much do I remember and look at the camera and how much do I look at what I've written down and outlined and scripted and things like that? And then like the more that I do that looking away, the more that I have to edit it and I make mistakes because I'm just starting this journey. So that causes more edits to have to happen. And then managing the time that I have to edit it, like how much time does it actually take? And then a big thing for me right now that I'm working on overcoming is distractions. My husband works from home, and right now our workspace, as far as where I have my computer, I have my studio downstairs, which he doesn't come in at all. But where I have my computer, which is much easier to edit on than my iPad or my phone, is right next to his work computer. So he doesn't work from home 100%. So I need to manage my time better so that I'm capitalizing the use of that computer when he's not home. And, you know, it's not that he's distracting me on purpose. Just when he's working, it's distracting.
Of course.
So I'm working on managing my time. And also something that you and I talked about is non-negotiable time to do the non-teaching things. And so I need to work on those two things. And I think that that's where my struggle is right now, is getting those non-teaching things, those non-recording things for the YouTube channel, fitting them in. And that's why I kind of decided to delay my launch of Your Violin Coach.
Yeah. And that totally makes sense, because there's so many things happening when you decide to do something new. And it could really be anything new. Like in your case, it's a YouTube channel. But if there's teachers here listening that are like trying to create a course or trying to market something in a new way or trying to have more of an online presence, it's just challenging because it's a new skill. And so not only are you learning how to do the new skill, like you said, you're learning how to record yourself, which is challenging. And you, oh my gosh, you start to notice like all the things that you do that you didn't notice before. So that part is challenging. But then also, because it's a new skill that you're learning, you're not totally sure how long it's going to take and where you can squeeze it in. Like, when do you have the energy to record? Is it the morning that you feel the most fresh? Is it the evening? And then also, how long does the editing take? So there's a lot of moving pieces that go into something new like this. And I often recommend that people start it very similar to like how I recommend adults start their piano practice. Like, smaller chunks are better. So even if that means, and you and I talked about this, you might be doing less videos per month. Great. If it's going to be less videos, but you know you can get them out consistently and you know you can be more happy with the quality that way, do less videos, right? And you can always make your goal work for your life and for you, because at the end of the day, you want to start this YouTube channel. And if you're in it for the long haul, it has to work for your life, right? If you were to say like, I'm going to post 5 videos a week and I'm going to spend the hours of 10 p.m. to midnight doing it, like there's a very high chance you might not succeed with that. So making it a realistic goal that actually works for your life is a very, very, very important part of that process.
Yeah.
So thank you for speaking to that. One other thing I want to backtrack a little bit, because I wanted to ask you about this too. I know and you mentioned it too, changing your rates and sending out that new studio policy, because you had sent out a new studio policy and then we worked together. You sent out another new one. Can you talk to me about some of the difficulties of that? Like, what were you feeling when you sent out those new studio policies?
So much anxiousness. So when I sent out the one just before, I knew that I wanted to automate payments. So I had said in that studio policy, there will be some changes coming with automated payments. Some I can't remember the exact wording, but something like that. So they knew more changes were coming, but I'm not sure, because I didn't even know at the time that I wrote the last policy, I didn't even know how drastic the change is going to be. So I'm not sure that it didn't come. It might've come as a shock to some people. And I had a lot of people that were really supportive. One person signed it like the day I sent it out. And so right then I felt validated and I felt like, oh, wow, people really do value me as much as I'm trying to value myself. Because that's really what I came to the realization of, is I wasn't valuing myself and I wasn't valuing the service that I was providing. And I was just burning myself out trying to provide more of it to compensate for the fact that I wasn't valuing myself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I went in there. You helped me craft an email, explain some of the changes that were the big changes that were coming, like what I was adding value, how I was adding value. And then when they clicked on the policy is where they would go through and find out the changes. I also listed all the things that I had already been doing that were part of the tuition, like maintaining my music library that many of my students borrow from, planning for lessons, planning for recitals. I provide refreshments and give my students gifts at recitals. There is a long list of the things that I do that aren't in lesson time. And when I wrote that list, I was like, wow, I already do most of the things on this list. Right. So, and even before that, I had realized that I was during the time I was planning my winter recital. I was during that time, I was actually spending more time outside of teaching, working, than I was inside of the studio. And it's not like that always, but at that time, that's how it was. And I kind of figured out that I'm spending at least, when you average it out over the whole year, I'm spending at least as much time outside of the studio that I am in the studio. So yeah. that made me feel like, okay, it does make sense to make this big change. And it gave me a little bit of confidence, but it still was very anxious and nerve-wracking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're absolutely not alone in that. I've broken down with several teachers, like when we write down the whole list of all the things that they're doing outside of the studio, and we write down how much they're charging, and we start to actually add up the time. Oftentimes teachers are making like a third of what they think they're making because of exactly what you just said. You know, they're spending time planning recitals, they're spending money on gifts and music for the recital that they're not really tracking because maybe it's even coming out of like personal family money. And so, it's stark. It's stark when you break it down and you see the numbers on paper and you're like, oh, I thought I was making, you know, $30 an hour, which is a rate that I would say needs to be much higher, but really I'm making $10 an hour because for every hour that I'm teaching, I'm doing 2 hours of extra work averaged, you know, throughout the year or whatever that is. So
yeah,
I'm really glad that you spoke to that. It's never easy. I don't think I'm sure I've never encountered a coaching client that doesn't have anxiety about it. And I know it's one of the biggest things that people stress out about is raising rates and making changes to the studio policy because we're scared, right? It's scary. It seems like, you know, what if the whole studio quits? So thank you for speaking to that. And I'd love to know, what was it like in the correspondence? Because the other thing that happens, for those of you that don't know, is like when you send out a new studio policy, it's not just like, oh, here's the new studio policy and everything magically falls into place. Can you speak a little more to some of the details that had to happen and how you handled that of like transitioning people over to the new studio policy and the new way of automatic billing?
So one thing that I did was I put my studio policy into a Google form. Yes. A Google form. So they had to go through each section and check. I read this section and at the end put their name and the date as to act as a signature. So that was a lot different because before I just kind of presented it to them and got a verbal, I agree. So that was a big change. And that kind of made it so that I would know, you know, yes, they read everything and they agree to everything. Now that doesn't mean I don't still have questions, because they go through it quickly, whatever, but they, you know, they had the opportunity to read everything and they said they read everything. As far as students who decided to discontinue or had questions, you really helped me in the beginning figure out, how do I respond to this? How do I explain it? And one of the things that, if I got a question about the cost, one of the things that I felt really helped was explaining to them that I'm elevating the studio by adding the things that I added and investing more time into my teaching and all of the things that I already do, investing more time into my continuing education and things like that, so that I can be a better teacher for their student. And this will allow me to do that. And I had some quit and some didn't. And then another big question that I had was the calendar, because I had always either not charged for holidays or rescheduled lessons. If I was going to be home, I would reschedule them for earlier in the day on the holiday so that at least I had the afternoon with my family. Or if I took the holiday off, I just didn't charge. So I now am taking holidays off and I'm structuring my lesson fees as a monthly fee. So they don't get a credit if the holiday is off. So I had some questions for that. And one student was on a Monday and they were very concerned because there was a lot of money holidays. And that one was interesting because once in a while they would reschedule, but a lot of times they just didn't come. But I think they liked that they got that credit.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I did agree to switch their lesson day. And what I ended up doing was putting my students on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays now. And I don't teach all day every day either. And I put my kids on Mondays. So my kids now have a dedicated lesson time. I was at the time when I changed it, I was teaching 4 lessons to 3 of my kids because one of my oldest, or not my oldest, my 13-year-old takes violin and piano lessons. And since then I've added, my 11-year-old has added violin. So now I have 5 lessons on Mondays and they're all my kids.
And then you can take the holidays off with your kids.
Yes. I can take the holidays off with them. And we reschedule if we want to, or we don't if we don't want to.
Yes, I love that. And that's such a creative solution too. I love when you came up with that, because there was a lot of back and forth, and we had gone, so for private coaching, we'll use Voxer, which is an app that you can kind of like talk back and forth on. And we had gone back and forth a lot on the specific students of like, okay, well, this person said this, how should I respond? This person said this, how should I respond? And I think what I enjoyed watching so much was you slowly, and you spoke to this too, you slowly like just stepping more into your power and recognizing your worth of being willing to say to someone, like if someone, you know, responded with like, wow, this is quite an increase in rate, you kind of standing in your power and saying, I hear you. It is like, it is an increase of rate. These are the things I'm doing to add value. Let me know if that works for you. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And just being okay with letting people walk away if it didn't work for them. And it's such a shift that has to happen. It sounds simple. When you hear the words, it sounds simple, but it's such a transformational shift that has to happen from like, oh my gosh, I need to schedule these makeup lessons. Oh my gosh, I can't charge more. Da, 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 da. Like the scarcity, like fear mindset into this is what I'm doing. Let me know if it works for you or not. And being willing to let people walk away. And I think when you shift into that mindset, everything goes up. Right? You're just going up from there, because now you are working now with the people that really value you as much as you are valuing yourself. And you will only continue to attract more students into the studio that value you. And that means that when you make future changes, if you make future changes, it's simpler, it's easier, because these students already value you so much as much as you're valuing yourself. And I just, oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I do too. And I don't necessarily feel like, maybe some of them, but I don't necessarily feel like the students that left don't value me. It's just, it didn't work for them. And that's totally okay. Yes. You know, and it was, some of them were harder than others. You know, some of them I knew that they were, that their lessons were going to come to an end eventually. So it just was like a good avenue for them to say, okay, you know, this is the end. And that was okay. You know, if I could have handpicked my students, maybe it would have been different, but then it wouldn't be what it is today. And I'm so excited for what it is.
Yeah. And thank you for saying that. Cause yeah, you had some wonderful families and friends and like people you had known for a long time that it didn't work out. And it's always so sad when that happens. Like I've cried over so many student relationships when it's like your favorite student or the person that you really love to teach. And it's not of an issue of value. It's an issue of like, it just doesn't work for them, or it doesn't work for their family's finances and all of those different types of things. And that's okay. Sometimes it's okay to say goodbye, and goodbye doesn't have to be forever. And then also sometimes that allows you an opportunity to reach out to them and talk with them. And I know you did that a few times, because my philosophy is always, if you have a studio policy that's pretty tight, you know, where you're communicating, these are my policies, you also can have personal conversations with personally with people behind the scenes. And you did that. You had a couple of families where you were willing to maybe work with them, or you were willing to like maybe try to come up with a creative solution because you really wanted them to stick around. And how did it feel to do that? To be able to say like, these are my policies, and also let's have a chat over here about it.
Exactly. I actually had a few families that in the email that I sent out, I said, please let me know if this doesn't work with for you. I want you to feel free to come and talk to me about it. That wasn't the exact wording either, but something like that. And I had one family that talked to me, and we talked about a creative solution, and they did really consider it and ended up not choosing to do it. And that was a hard loss. And then I had another one who, she did continue with me. And then again, she had some new things coming up in her life. And so they decided to discontinue as well. And so those two were really difficult losses. And I mean, all of them are, but yeah, if they had concerns, I definitely addressed them. And most of them, I said, this is what I'm doing. Like you had walked me through, this is what I'm doing. I understand it's a change. Let me know if it works. But a few of them I did have, like, I call them creative solutions. I think we called them that together.
Yeah.
to come up with, what am I okay with bending on that will hopefully help them be able to accept the changes that we're going to make.
Right. And I love that, because
I think sometimes people get into this like all or nothing mindset of like, if I'm raising my rates, like I'm for sure going to lose this student and I'm for sure going to lose this family. And this family I know struggles financially and da, 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 da. And I just want to clarify what you said. So we sent out an email to most of the studio that just said, this is what we're doing going forward. Of course, worded very eloquently and very kindly. And then you sent out a few people you didn't include on that bulk list and you emailed them personally and added a sentence that said, please let me know if you have questions or concerns. I want to talk with you. And so she kind of opened the door to have conversations with those families that she knew, you know, likely would be quite shocked or maybe financially weren't in the position to do the new rate and things like that. And as teachers, we have such big hearts and we care so deeply for our students. And so I love coming up with those creative solutions of how can I step into my power as a business owner? How can I really value myself and elevate the business and make sure that it works for my life? And in doing so, keep even more of an open heart, because when I value myself, I have even more to give to the families that might not be able to afford it or to the people that need scholarship spots. And anyway, so I'm so happy that you were able to do that.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up here, Becky, can you please just give listeners and me a sense of what you're excited for? Because we're in first quarter when we're recording this. It's March, but we're coming up on second quarter. What are you excited for the rest of the year? And what are you most looking forward to in your studio and your business?
I'm really excited to see where the YouTube channel goes. I hope it does well, but I'm nervous about it. Just like I was nervous to make the changes in my studio, I'm nervous about that. And I'm excited to see what other things I can do to step into online space and have hours where I'm using my skill as a teacher while my kids are at school and not as much in the evening. Right now I'm good with the evening hours that I'm keeping. So I don't necessarily want to change that, but I want to see if I can make additional income in other ways while my kids are at school. So I don't have to add more hours to the evenings.
I love that. And I know based off of everything that I saw when we worked together, how resilient and tenacious you are. And I have a feeling that once you get that YouTube channel up, you are going to be consistent. And that is where you're going to find the success, right? It won't be a matter of if, it'll just be a matter of when.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Becky, for coming on the podcast to chat. I really enjoyed this. And I know that listeners are going to have several takeaways and hear several things about your story and what you shared that resonate with them. So I really appreciate you taking the time. Before we jump off, can you tell listeners if they want to, I know you don't have any videos up yet, but if they want to subscribe to your YouTube channel, can they, if they want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Absolutely. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, Your Violin Coach, if you would like to. I hope that many of you do. And I will, I'm hoping that I can get a website up before or congruently with that. So I will give you that information as well.
I'll put it in the show notes. Okay, perfect.
So.
Well, thank you so much, Becky. This is so awesome. We will talk soon. And to everybody listening, have an amazing week. You can do exactly what Becky's doing. You can make these big changes. I think if we've learned anything today in this conversation, it's that it can be scary and you can do it anyway, right? And it can be a really positive thing in the end. So
yes,
happy, not practicing. Have a great week. I'll talk to you all next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. I love connecting with open-minded business owners from all over the world. As you know, a studio policy is one of the most important assets of your business, and a good studio policy will save you time and energy. For this reason, I created a free PDF with a list of 3 ways that you can level up your studio policy right now. To grab the free PDF, head on over to ashleyjyoung.com/levelup, and the link is in the show notes as well. Talk to you soon.